From the dawn of time we came, moving silently down through the centuries, living many secret lives, struggling to reach the time of the gathering, when the few who remain will battle to the last. No one has ever known we were among you. Until now.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. And with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello, hello.
And unfortunately, Trish is away this week dealing with some family matters, but she will be back hopefully soon. She's going to be in and out for the next little bit, so be patient, but she will be back with us soon, hopefully. But today we also got Val Stepanenko.
What's up?
What's up?
So this starts my birthday month of movies, and we're starting off with a doozy because we're going to remake Highlander. Sacrilege, you say? Sacrilege.
Yeah,
kind of. Kind of, but at the same time, not 3 days before we are recording this, they announced that they're going to be remaking, rebooting it.
Yeah, so let's face it, we want them to do it right. We're going to put them on the right track. And along the way, it's not that the structure of this movie is terrible or anything, unless you're Siskel and Ebert, and I'll play that for you a little bit later. But this was obviously meant to be a one-off film, not the franchise it turned into. Consequently, we got five movies, a television series, an animated series, and an animated movie. And when you look at the whole, kind of terrible. TV series was pretty good, gotta say. Cartoon, terrible. Anime was pretty good. And the movies, as they progress, movies, really, there is only one good one.
Yeah, there can only be one. There can be only one. Yeah.
Thank you. Steal a tagline.
Endgame's okay.
There should only be one, as it was originally structured, yes.
Yeah, as it was originally structured, it works. But because they decided to make a franchise out of something after the fact, they were constantly rewriting the rules of what that was going to be and constantly retconning things. So today, we're not just going to remake Highlander, we're going to rewrite the rules in a way that makes sense.
Yes, and as we were watching it, I was thinking about that because of the sequels, quote-unquote, and the TV series. There's a way you can make it work without having to change the tone of this particular film.
I don't want the aliens that the second one did, even though they wound up re-editing that in a way where they took them out. That was another one of those, well, let's rewrite the rules. And then they wound up doing it again in the later movie of what those rules are, and the prize wasn't really the prize. Okay, so, and the meaning of there can be only one isn't what they think that is. I like that.
Yes.
But there are certain rules of being an immortal in this world that we need to define. Because, I mean, some of these immortals, you know, one of the ones is they can't fight on holy ground. Well, why? Because in some cases, some of these people have been around longer than the religions themselves that they're talking about.
But yeah, they're not specific about what type of holy ground.
No, they're right? Not. And so what exactly it is about holy ground, and how would they know in some cases that it is holy ground? You know, say they were fighting in I think there's actually a novel about fighting in the Temple of Apollo and something happening there, but not a continuity novel. And that would be consecrated ground. But so would an Egyptian temple or, you know, a mosque or...
Yeah, or a Japanese temple or...
Yeah, so what is it about faith? in some cases where maybe an immortal might be older than the faith itself, that they still respect it.
Well, they do kind of explain that in the original movie when the Kurgan and MacLeod are talking in the church, where they talk about how it's tradition. It's not because it's
holy ground, Highlander.
Yeah. Nicely done. It's not because because the ground itself is holy. It's sort of the respected safe place where they can meet without conflict.
Yeah.
And I think that's the impression I got from that particular scene anyhow.
And I'm trying to remember, was it a movie or a TV series where it wasn't respected? I think it was a movie. It might have been the third one. The one with, I can't remember his first name. Payne was one of the villain mortals. No, maybe it wasn't. That might have been Endgame, actually, where these guys were killing immortals on holy ground.
Yeah, the last one I saw.
And I think
was
Connor had ducked out into a monastery.
Yeah, no, I the last one I remember I actually watched was the one with Muriel Van Peebles. So
okay, yeah, it's the one after that then.
Yeah, no, that was enough to make me go, oh, you know what? I'm not going to ruin it for myself anymore.
Yeah, no, this one. Well, let's see, five movies. We got Highlander 2, The Quickening. Yeah. The Chocolating, The Quickening. There's also The Renegade.
The Chocolating.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. Well, how three more got made after this, I have no idea. But the Renegade version smoothed over things for people because they wound up turning that into a sci-fi in the future of 2084, something,
yeah,
2048, I think it was.
Ridiculous.
And it was dumb as fuck.
Yeah.
But Michael Ironside. Yeah. That's a plus. And more Sean Connery, who was an Egyptian, but wasn't really, because he was supposed to be Spanish, but not, because he sounded Scottish.
Yeah, yeah, and in my casting, I fix all of that.
Actually, there is some historical fact about, you could tie the Scots back to ancient Egypt, because there was a person named Skoda who had left Egypt for that region. So there is some truth to that, even though it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Yes, my casting also fixes that. And I'm assuming the remake rumors as well are going to fix that.
Yeah, I mean, we have a Frenchman playing a Scotsman and a Scottish man playing an Egyptian who's supposed to be Spanish. It's a little convoluted and the accents don't really work.
Right. Number three was The Sorcerer here in Canada. It was called something else everywhere else. Something. But it was called The Sorcerer here, so I'm going to go with that. Number four was Endgame, and number five was The Source, which was strictly a Duncan MacLeod movie, not a Connor MacLeod movie. And it is also dumb as fuck. Like, they did not learn. They literally made the same mistakes. Let's go back and do a post-apocalyptic future. Never do this again. Never, ever do this again. And, of course, we had two TV series. We had the main one with Duncan MacLeod, and then the spinoff series, The Raven, as well, and which only got one season.
Was The Raven, did that one, it had more mythos in it than...
I don't think mythos was barely, it
was in The Raven.
If he was, maybe one or two.
Did this focus on the female character?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. That was
my
the
bad.
Female character. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't ever remember seeing it, but I did love the TV series.
Yeah, so, and then there was the cartoon series and the anime movie. And there's even been some fan films that they wound up putting on some of the DVD releases as a kind of a serialized through the discs, which was kind of cool.
There's a lot of stuff that I didn't even know about because, like I said, after the third movie, I kind of checked out because I'm tired of them just ruining that first movie for me.
Yes, there are four MacLeods throughout all of these iterations. So you've got the original Connor, Duncan, Quentin, and Colin.
But there were only three. There was the original, and then there were the two, right? So
I just told you. No, there's five movies.
There's five in the series.
There's five. Four with Connor, two with Duncan.
Really?
There's a crossover one.
There was a crossover one. Yeah. And I saw part of that one, actually.
Oh,
Endgame's not bad. Endgame's not bad because it kind of does an interesting thing with the retcon, and then the final battle with the Kurgan, and to receive the prize and to beat whatever, because I can't remember the whole movie, unfortunately, but to beat whatever the villain was, Connor knew he wasn't going to be powerful enough, but with the power of the Kurgan and himself and all the stuff Duncan's done over the series, Duncan could. Duncan had to take Connor's head to receive that quickening to be able to get to the end of that movie. But anyway, go find those movies. They're cool.
Yeah. Sorry. I have so much reverence for the first one.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. And then you watch The Quickening and it's just fucking horrible. Yeah. But I mean, most of those came out, the sequel came out way after because the movie itself found new life on home video.
Yes.
Cause I remember I was working in the video stores at that time and I hadn't seen Highlander. Everybody was like, oh, you haven't seen that movie yet? You haven't seen that movie yet? So when I finally did, it was on a home video release of the film. And of course, I fell in love with it after that. And thankfully, wasn't that long after a TV series launched and stuff. So
it was a great movie.
I think that by that, I don't think the series actually launched until after the third movie, though.
I think it was after the second movie. I can't remember.
Maybe the third one was around the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were trying to capitalize on.
Yeah. Connor was in the pilot of the series as well.
Yeah. Actually, I think that the third movie was the direct result of the popularity of the TV series.
Right.
Because I think that's the only way that the third movie would have gotten made after the Quickening, the disaster of the Quickening.
Well, yeah. No kidding. Because it was a huge flop. It was amazing that this even became what it became.
Yeah. Well, because nobody wanted it. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted a sequel. It was a perfectly concise story in and of itself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, at that time, I didn't want a sequel, and it was, you could tell it wasn't supposed to have one, and they were struggling to figure out how to do it after having given him the final prize. So, was it? Like, what did he get?
Yeah.
In the end. I mean, the prize is kind of this Zen state where he's kind of can hear the world, he can hear everybody's thoughts if he focuses in on it, which would make him the most powerful man in the world.
Yes.
Even though he's now human and can age properly and have a family, that's supposed to be the gift. But I mean, he could look into politicians' head, and he's thinking benevolently, I can help these people relate to each other, but at the same time it could easily corrupt as well.
Yeah, and I mean, and that kind of gives you some perspective on what would happen if the Kurgan had won, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting concept, but again, just not necessary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to have them fighting for something, but because they're immortal, where do these traditions come from in the first place? And it's much like telefriends, and things are constantly changing. You know, you do the grocery list and by the time it gets to the end of the line, it's something completely different. And considering how long these people live, in some cases, as you mentioned, Mythos, his memories stretch about 5,000 years, and after that it gets a little fuzzy because he's that old.
Right. And I mean, even Sanchez is over 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Ramirez, sorry. Did I put it? Fuck. Ramirez. He's over 1,000 years old, right?
He was born in 896 BC.
Wow.
In Egypt.
So he's over 2,000 years old then.
Yeah. Kurgan is also not quite as old, but he's still in kind of that age bracket as well, whereas Connor was born in 1518.
Yes. So.
So he was the youngest of the crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he won.
Maybe, right?
A little more stamina. Yeah.
Well, I mean, his first death would have been, he would have been around 18 at the time, even though he says 20.
Yeah.
Because they can't do math.
Yeah. No, there's lots of flaws.
Ancient Scots can't do math. Yeah. They don't know when they were born.
Yeah.
They only have, like, stone pedestals to tell them the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, look, another knight.
But that raises an interesting point, though, is if these immortals are continuing to appear, when does the end game actually occur?
Well, you and I, long, long ago, I don't remember if you remember the conversation, we came up with a kind of solution to the problem where it would be, there wouldn't be more than one prize.
Yes.
And there would be generations of immortals. I don't know if we agreed every 1,000 years or every 100 years. Yeah. I think 100 years makes more sense because you're still dealing with a global, on a global scale, yes. Right? So it would still leave a lot of immortal births to deal with. And there would be a prize within that group. So with the Kurgan, he may not have killed everybody within his bracket yet to receive the prize, whereas there's nobody left from Connor's bracket.
Yeah,
that and could Connor work. Could have been the last one remaining within his generation of immortals, which is why he receives the prize. And you can choose, this is a bit of a rule that I took from the Quickening, you can choose to become human and receive this gift or enter the fray again.
Yes.
Which means you forego the gift and of course they don't know these particular things, so they just sense an immortal and we gotta go kill him.
Yeah. And you know what, that could actually even apply even better to the Kurgan, is if he decides to enter he's killed all of the people from his generation.
Yeah, this would explain why you could have a whole bunch of immortals after he's won the prize.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. it fills that gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he got a better solution to that, but that was kind of in the back of my brain. It was just
I had forgotten about the conversation, but I do remember it now. And I was thinking, like, they kind of half-ass explain it in the Highlander TV series, is that they have different clans of immortals,
mm-hmm.
right, where they exist concurrently, but they're part of a different group of immortals somehow.
Well, I would think, you know, if you win the prize, you would, like, become an elder or something.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, you would die, so that whatever knowledge you've gained would be temporary because maybe that's part of it too, is anybody who's won the prize, generally you wouldn't know because it's kind of an eye blink into for the immortals.
Yes.
So, you know, they're only going to be around another 70 years, 50 years or whatever, depending on how old the mortal was before their first death.
Guys, there can be only one.
And that goes back to something about the source. Now, Ramirez talks about, during Connor's training, this source, this energy that unifies all living things. And if you concentrate, you can feel it. You can feel the snort of the stag as it's ready to charge, the flow of the water. We see that scene on the beach, and it's kind of the Star Wars Force thing, right? The source. And we see in the fifth movie that one person can enter into the source. That's the reference to there can be only one.
Yeah.
Not one immortal to receive the prize. There could be lots of prizes. But only one can join with the source.
That's an interesting concept. I can work with that.
See, I just watched the movie and then I listened to There Can Be Only One. That meant to me there could only be one immortal, but I don't tear it apart. I'm just enjoying
In context with the movie, that is the way it was written and intended.
Right? Mm-hmm.
But as they continue to...
Well, they never defined... Like, I don't remember what the source was in the source because that movie was shit. but you never... That bit in the training never really comes up again in another movie. Like, this is an ability of the immortals to have a higher sense already. And we never really see that explored again, even in the TV series. And it should be. Like, he opens an old bottle of brandy and he can tell you when it was bottled because he's sniffing the air from a past time that he recognizes.
Brandy. Bottled in 1783.
Wow, that's old.
1783 was a very good year. Mozart wrote his great mass. The Montgolfier brothers went up in their first balloon. And England recognized the independence of the United States.
Is that right?
Yes.
And they make such a point of referencing that it never reappears in the movie. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, aside from being able to sit to do things like be able to really truly enjoy the experience of opening a bottle of brandy, that it would be a combat skill for them, right? Like, when like that opening fight scene in the parkade. I'd like to see sort of him using that to guide him to his opponent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But he kind of does, right?
Did you watch the director's cut or the original cut?
I think it's the original cut, I think.
Okay, because I watched the director's cut, and I can see why this particular thing in the scene, because you mentioned the fight in the garage with Fossil.
Yeah.
And the guy who plays Fossil, he was actually the stunt coordinator for the film. There's this ridiculous thing where he's just backflipping down. All the way down. I'm like, wow, I can see why you cut that, because it's stupid.
Yes. Sorry,
okay,
we did watch the director's cut then.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, and there's extra scenes with Rachel as well, where he discovers Rachel in World War II.
Yes, and you know what? This is the first time I've seen the director's cut.
Okay.
Because I watched that and went, oh, that totally makes sense. I can't believe I never caught it. It's because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would keep that. I liked that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I'd like to play Rachel up a little bit and how their relationship was, I guess, over that period of time. It would have been about 40 years in 1986.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very feasible that she could have been World War II. Now, if you contemporize that, you're going to have to probably change the war setting. But
or make her a little bit older.
Yeah, or make her older.
Which is what
I did. Which would not be a problem at all, really.
You'd have to make her much older, then.
I think maybe it's time for the trailer, and then we'll get a little bit into the film details, and we'll talk a lot more Highlander, because we love this fucking movie.
From another time comes a man of great power.
Talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places. A warrior of incredible strength.
You've the devil in you.
We've been kinsmen 20 years.
Conor MacLeod was my kinsman.
I don't know who you are.
Because you were born different, men will fear you, try to drive you away.
A man uncertain of his future.
What you got here, Brenda? It's a guy who's been creeping around since at least 1700.
It's not possible.
And haunted by his past.
Wait a minute, Nash. I want some answers.
You cannot die, MacLeod.
I am Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. I was born in 1518 in the village of Glenfinnan on the shores of Loch Shiel. I am immortal.
A hero who is about to face his greatest challenge.
You will always be weaker than I.
What can you tell me about a 7-foot lunatic hacking away with a broadsword at 1 o'clock in the morning, New York City, 1985?
Not much, for he is not alone.
In the end, there can be only one.
There can be only one.
Here we are, we're the princes of the universe. Here we belong, fighting for survival. We've come to be the rulers of your world.
Okay, awesomeness.
Really, yes.
This movie was Highlander from 1986, directed by Russell Mulcahy, who went on to do Scorpion King 2 and Resident Evil Extinction. Yeah. Story and screenplay by Gregory Wyden, who also created the Prophecy franchise.
Another one where the first movie was freaking amazing, and then they just went downhill from there.
I thought I read something that they were actually going to have the two properties crossover at some point, but it never actually happened.
Thank goodness it never happened.
Thank God. He also did Backdraft, so, you know, there's something there. And the screenplay was also written by Peter Bellwood and Larry Ferguson. Ferguson responsible for things like Hunt for Red October, Alien 3, and Beverly Hills Cop 2. The movie was budgeted at $16 million and had a worldwide gross of only $12.8. So it really was home video that made this thing happen again.
Yes.
Because yeah. It was a loss. Most of the money that this movie made actually was made internationally, not domestically.
I can kind of see that. I honestly can't see American audiences sort of engaging in this theatrically, especially in the mid-80s when we'd had such flops like Excalibur around that same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People just weren't into the swords and sorcery type stuff in the...
was kind of a terrible trailer, to be honest. Yeah. Like, lots of overdubbing, not utilizing the Queen music in the best way, not using Sean Connery in the best way.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things they definitely could have done better. But still, IMDb gives it a 7.2 out of 10, and Rotten Tomatoes, with a slightly less, at 68% fresh, with an audience score of 79%. So audiences like it a lot better than the critics do. And remind me a little bit later. I got a little something from Siskel and Ebert as well.
I think we need to hear that. right. And it's funny because when I was watching this again for the first time in a while, I'll be honest, I haven't watched it in quite some time. One of the things that struck me was how beautiful some of the transitions were in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like they're just so slick. Especially from the mid-80s.
For sure.
I mean, and some of the cinematography, again, some of those expansive scenes were just absolutely gorgeous. And story-wise, I mean, it's not critic fair.
Yeah, and right? I can see where some people, and even critics or even just average viewers, could get confused watching this because it does jump times quite often without warning, and it doesn't give you any, well, where are we now kind of moments. Like, okay, we're obviously in ancient Scotland, but we don't know the exact time frames of where we're jumping to. And then the World War II. And that was something I think they did in the TV series, is they would at least tell you where we're jumping to next. But I think it's one of the strengths of the franchise and in telling their story of the Immortals.
Yeah. Oh, you need those scenes, right? It shows their immortality and the struggles that they have as immortals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's critical that where Ramirez is explaining to MacLeod what will happen to his wife.
Yeah.
Right? And then the pain he goes through, and he goes 400 more years without taking a wife.
Yeah, that is a seriously long trauma. Like, you're talking hundreds of years of depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe if you're a young immortal, you're not seeing it right away. But, you know, once you've been around a couple thousand years, holy cow.
Yeah.
Like, the loneliness of that and having to watch loved ones die over and over and over again. And Ramirez warns of that. I mean, he went through it himself. He traveled the world, and his stepfather was Masamune, the one who created all those wonderful Japanese swords, was his stepfather, Owen.
Or father-in-law.
And, you know, that's where he gets his sword, and eventually Connor gets it from Ramirez after he is killed by the Kurgan.
Yeah, we'll talk about the swords. We are so talking about the swords.
Let's talk about the swords.
It's a guy
funny
thing.
You bring it up.
Well,
okay, no, it's not entirely a guy thing. I'm sure there are a lot of women out there.
It's not the length of your sword.
There's a fascination with it as well. Pardon me?
It's not the length of the sword. It's how you use it.
Sure?
Well, and that's part of it, is one, how they use it, because Ramirez is teaching MacLeod how to fight in the Japanese style, but MacLeod's using... two-handed broadsword.
Right, instead of a katana. It's not the same thing.
Instead of a lightweight katana, exactly. And there's a scene where Brenda calls Facile?
Facile? Facile was the guy in the garage.
Yes.
Yep.
He's using a rapier, and she calls it a broadsword.
Talita Salamanca.
Yes, right? But she calls it a broadsword. She's an expert on swords, and she calls it a fucking broadsword.
Okay, she sucks.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really got under my skin.
What's a metallurgist doing working for the police in forensics?
In forensics. There's some other flaws in there, yeah. But really, yeah. The swordplay was really well handled. Mm-hmm. But yeah, having...
And swordplay is pretty impressive considering how short-sighted that Christopher Lambert is.
Yes. Yeah, the fact that he's doing that kind of thing when he can't see...
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, it's so bad he's classified legally blind.
Yeah.
I mean, he obviously can see if he's got glasses and stuff, but and that was another fight because he'd come on the horses and he'd constantly forget to take his glasses off.
Yeah, and apparently he can't wear contacts for some reason.
Well, yeah, I can imagine. I've seen how thick his glasses are.
Yeah, so, but yeah, this. I mean, I love the swords. But, you know, make sure you're using them right and make sure that you're calling them by the right fucking names.
It was interesting when I was doing some research on this, the names that they wanted for Connor. I mean, they obviously had big aspirations at some point, you know, attached with Mel Gibson and Kurt Russell was one I read about, and he turned it down to go do Big Trouble. So it all worked out.
It all worked out, yes.
Mark Singer was on that list. I'm not sure I would have felt about The Beastmaster, and I don't know if this movie would have done as well. It might have just been a one-off if it was Mark, but it'd been okay. You know, the sword fights would have been all right. He'd already done it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what makes it work so well is the fact that Christopher Lambert was not somebody well established to North American audiences,
exactly.
And that was also the failing of the, that's probably why it didn't do as well in the US, because your lead is somebody they didn't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only other American movie he was in was Tarzan. He had minimal dialogue because he didn't know how to speak English. He'd only just learned prior to this movie, and it's amazing how he actually handles the dialogue considering he's really just starting to get a handle on the language. Did all right. I mean, and having to put on an accent on top of it all.
Yes. Well.
With varying degrees of success. Yeah. I don't think anybody's very successful with the accents.
Nobody's very successful with the accents, right? And in this modern age, or this day and age, where we have international stars, a lot more international stars than we did when this movie was originally made, you can cast to type.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't sure what region the Kurgan was from, but I would figure he was probably Germanic or something.
Germanic or Eastern European. Or,
yeah.
I mean, if he's as old as he was, he predates that.
Yeah, he's not as quite as old as Ramirez, because he was one of Ramirez's students.
Yeah. But, so probably possibly the Huns.
Yeah, I think there is something written somewhere that he did travel with the Huns at some point, but he still predates the Huns a little bit.
Yeah, but certainly, yeah.
Definitely about 2,000 years old.
Yeah, so around that era, right? Yeah. And around that region too, I would think, yeah.
Yeah, I think Ramirez had been around probably about 500 years before Kurgan had his first death. Or his immortal birth, I don't know. Birth, death? Death, yeah. Birth. Death Day. Happy Death Day.
Happy Death Day.
Oh, wait,
Day.
That's a movie.
No, I like the fact that they used Christopher Lambert and not some big name to be the lead in that movie, because if you think of Christopher Lambert, you think of Highlander.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that's kind of what keeps that movie fresh and keeps it alive. Because if you were to use a big name like Kurt Russell or something, you're like, oh, didn't he also do Big Moonlight?
Yeah, and I don't think
that would have made it distinct.
Yeah, the fact that it would have felt like a movie star stepping into that
exactly.
role.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
it was a good choice.
Mel Gibson they looked at, and I guess he would later on go to do Braveheart. So
exactly.
Yeah.
It's not fair. He gets all the good movies under his belt. Yeah. No. Christopher Lambert's. He was perfect.
Yeah, I thought he did pretty good job with it, considering, the simple explanation of, like, where are you from, Nash?
You talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places.
Which is Russell Nash being his AKA at the time.
And yeah, he had the
just
voice.
This, because it doesn't sound fully French.
No.
With the way he learned English, I'm not sure what muddied up his American accent, but it works. There's something really unique about it.
There is something really unique
about it. Which made me struggle, because I kind of wanted that in my actor when I recast, but I couldn't find it.
That is going to be very tough, and that was part of the thing, too, is he has such a unique accent this, because it's not a French accent. It's something very, very specific to him.
Between the movie and the TV series, we got two people who were supposed to be Scottish. Neither one of them were Scottish.
No, but he was fun. He was fun. He looked cute in long hair. Well, he did. He's a good-looking man.
And then the one thing I'd like to add into our version of the movie is more immortals. Like, there was actually a scene that was lost in a fire that didn't get make it into the movie with another Asian immortal, a samurai, which I think that fight happens before the Kurgan and Castagir. I want to see more of Castagir because there seems to be a real friendship.
There does. And I mean, you have to balance that, right? Because McLeod's story is so important, right? Mm-hmm. But I'd almost like to see...
Well, they referenced this party on the Boston Common during the American Revolution. Castagir's not in the scene.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why is he... You guys are referencing about this time, and he's not in the scene. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, I'd like to see more of Connor's journey from... when Ramirez is gone to present day, like even if they're short scenes, mm-hmm. right? Other brief battles with immortals, brief interactions with the immortals that he's friendly with.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you could actually have a lot more fun with that, especially if we go with that sort of tiers or groups of immortals that are sort of their group. Castagir doesn't necessarily have to be part of Connor's group, and that's why they can be friends,
mm-hmm.
right? But because he's the last of his group, he can still fall to the Kurgan,
mm-hmm.
right? So you could have that sort of...
Well, every immortal can fall to any other immortal.
Yeah, right.
And they still go through the quickening, and that power is transferred over. That's why Duncan got so powerful by the end of a series, because he's pretty much chopping off a head every episode.
Yeah. Right. But that would allow for the friendship between Duncan and Castagir.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're not of the same group. So Connor doesn't have to fight Castagir.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Castagir likes Duncan, or Connor, we got to stop talking about Duncan because he's messing me up.
I understand that the reimagining about doing the groups and stuff like that, but you kind of need that little bit of tension where they have this friendship, but there can be only one. I'm going to keep going back to that, folks. Because
you only got 2 hours. One, so. I don't want to see, you know, friends fight, in at least not in the movie.
No, but that's... Like I said, that's going to cause that tension enough. Yeah.
Although you get the feeling there was Connor knew Facile enough, because he did try to say, hey, we don't have to fight, when they were at the garden there watching wrestling.
Yes.
Initially, it was supposed to be hockey, by the way, but NHL didn't want them accentuating the violence. So we get the Fabulous Freebirds instead.
Yeah.
A good old AWA match.
Yep.
Yeah, but how do you harbor friendships with somebody whose head you're going to have to take eventually?
Well, and I kind of got I think they're kind of suggesting that until it gets down to the end game. Sorry, I know mm-hmm. they call a movie that, but they're willing to just be friends.
Yeah. Right? They're obviously drawn in groups to facilitate this at some point. Like, there's, and you don't have to explain it too much. It's like geese migrating, right? Like, they are drawn to a certain place at a certain time to facilitate this. Like, maybe the prize is supposed to happen at a certain period of time, every 100 or 1,000 years or something, 500 years, I don't know. Maybe there's just a predetermined thing, this and there's a sixth sense where groupings will be drawn together, and that's because they're aware it's the gathering's happening. We don't know how, and I don't think it's important to know how.
No, that's true. One thing that they don't really discuss in the movie that needs to be addressed too is when Connor has his first death, the Kurgan's there and knows that Connor is immortal, right? They don't explain that, how he knows. Yeah,
that bugs me. That bugged me too. Yeah. And I think they did something about that in the TV series where Duncan found an immortal and knew, Richie was one. Richie turned into immortal way down the line. So Duncan was already aware that this was going to happen and was training him early before his first death. So there is something. They can still sense an immortal even though they haven't gone through the first death yet. I mean, I guess you're born immortal. You yeah. just don't know you're immortal until you die.
Yeah. Yeah, but there was no explanation and nobody understood why, and even the viewer didn't understand why. And again, that's part of building that tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that maybe Ramirez, as he's training Connor, can sort of fill in those gaps, right? And I'd like to have a scene with Ramirez in his backstory, right? Because all you get from Ramirez are the scenes with McLeod and later the Kurgan. But it would be nice to have just another short bit with Ramirez's past.
Yeah, maybe something with a prior thing with the Kurgan itself.
Yeah.
Like when he's protecting Heather and says, no, this is my woman, not Connor's. Like he doesn't want, because the Kurgan's already been stalking Connor yeah. and would have used Heather to get to Connor, which he does later on anyway with Brenda.
Yes.
Because he didn't get to do it the first time. Yeah. It takes him a few hundred more years before he gets to rub that in Connor's face.
It had great consequence to himself, mind you, but
yeah,
I forgot what I was going to say.
That's okay. Walk back through the doorway.
Yeah, I think we need to see just a little bit more of that history with the Kurgan and why he's so nasty.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Now I remembered. So yeah, you could even have Ramirez talks about how he'd been married three times. Right? Mm-hmm. And Kurgan can be responsible for the death of one of Ramirez's wives. Mm-hmm. Right? That could be a scene, mm-hmm. right? Where he turns on Ramirez and kills his wife when he can't kill Ramirez. And then that way it kind of ties into that opening scene and then ties again later when Kurgan does it yet again.
Clancy Brown initially visualized the Kurgan in his present day to be in a suit and a bowler hat. And I'm like, so odd job? Yeah, odd job from Goldfinger?
I liked his version.
The heavy metal version?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like when they're sitting in church and he's like, do you like my haircut? And it's just like one line of hair coming out. I'm sorry. Well, I'm a visual.
It came out of like this snake dragon tattoo on the side of his head. Yeah. It was really cool. Although they didn't do it very well. Yeah. I'd like to see that done a little bit better. But it played better to that really violent, like the Hun aspect that we thought he was.
Yes.
So yeah.
No, because the Kurgan is barbaric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't change much over those thousands of years. A couple thousand years, I guess.
No, because his motivation is he's singularly motivated by being the one.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's all he lives for, is his purpose. Right. Whereas the rest of the immortals, they're enjoying the time that they have.
Well, some of them anyway. Yeah. Some of them are very focused on the game and some are trying to live their lives or even avoid the game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And that could be where these last few survivors are, is they're the ones who have successfully skirted the game,
mm-hmm.
right? Only getting involved when necessary and becoming very skilled at the sword play and powerful in their own right. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am. Even those who aren't responsible for the death of another mortal, they still get some of that power from the quickening, don't they?
It's usually whatever mortal happens to be around. Yeah.
Yeah. So if there's another mortal close by, they can siphon off some of the power from that death.
Yeah.
Right. So that could be how they're continuing to get power.
I mean, whoever's closest technically will get the bulk of it.
The bulk of it, but certainly, yeah.
Whoever takes the head is the one that gets
it. Well, it's supposed to be, but I mean, generally speaking, there's not usually another mortal around. But if you're a group of immortals, that power could spread between the lot of you if you're all close enough.
Yeah.
Because how does the power know?
Is this an assumption or?
No, I think I seem to remember something like that in one of the later movies.
Yeah, there was an explanation that the quickening from a death goes to any immortals who are close enough to draw on that power. I have one more bone I want to pick with the swords.
Okay,
the Kurgan sword, while is amazing, there is no way that sword would have stood up because it comes out it comes in pieces, right? It would have had weak spots.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's constructed really well, but I don't think that it would have stood up. And that kind of technology, he obviously would have had to do it later, because when they made that sword, when he was pre-BC, or he was born BC. The technology to make that kind of sword, or even post that, would have been much later.
Right. Okay.
So I have a bit of, it was as cool as it was, accuracy is a bit of a bitch.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe some of these immortals wouldn't have been able to hold on to their swords, and some might have had to make some. Like, say if they were, what if you were born in the 80s when this movie was set, which I think, I guess we'd be moving to modern day, but,
or sort of in between maybe, and, I don't know.
You know, like, I wouldn't know how to get a sword, but you could go to the scrapyard and weld something together.
You just get them at the same place where you get your magic cards.
What?
They have, like, those sword shops where you buy your magic cards.
Yeah, the display swords that will fall apart if you actually used them in real battle.
Well, I don't know. We could test it and see if we can lop a head off with it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, it does work. No, it only goes halfway. I don't know.
You know somebody who's going to be the guinea pig on that?
I don't. You know, there's so many depressed people in this world.
Oh, man.
What a dark place to go.
Yeah, well,
hey man,
is that just the Trish spot? Is that what happens in that seat?
I'm just tossing out ideas here, folks.
Yeah, I mean, there are true swordsmiths. I mean, certainly Japanese swordsmiths, and there are people who make
sure
functional swords in North America and all over the world. But, of course, finding that and then making sure that nobody knows that you have this sword.
But that, I mean, that was part of the TV series too, was, you know, not everybody has the same resources, and those are the guys that tend to get picked off first.
Yes,
but Connor had a Yoda, right?
Yeah.
So Ramirez was his Yoda.
Yeah.
So as the line goes down, the, you know, if there was an immortal born in this era, he would have a Yoda.
Well, not necessarily. And that's the thing. I want to know why Ramirez feels the need and is drawn to certain people to be this Yoda instructor for them.
Because it was a necessary part of the story.
Well, obviously for the story, but what's the motivation? Here's this fresh immortal you could pick off and get your prize if you want.
That bugged me,
actually. You know, why did he turn up out of nowhere to become this guy's instructor?
And I think, and that's where I think a scene with the Kurgan and the betrayal of the Kurgan explains that, right? Is he wants as many people against the Kurgan as he can.
Yeah.
Because he knows how powerful the
Kurgan is. He's recruiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. It just isn't in the movie.
Yes. Right. But we can fix that, right?
Yeah.
One of the minor gaps that can be fixed.
Yeah. Well, there's probably quite a few, but
but all the gaps in there are
they minimal minor amount of time.
Yeah.
I think the movie, the structure of it works pretty well even now. Like it ages quite well. Some of the animated effects of the quickening doesn't, but that's some of the stuff that looks the worst. But some of the simple things like the sword fight and the sparking. It's such a simple effect, you know, like the swords are hooked up with wires and, you know, on a car battery, one positive, one negative, and that's what causes the sparks. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Does it need to be there? Probably not, but it still looks awesome.
Yep. Yeah. No, they did a lot with.
Although, what the fuck was with Kurgan that he could topple an entire tower with their fight? Like, it was that epic that the entire tower only left a set of stairs. I'm like, really? How shitty was that tower built?
Well, I mean,
stairs were built really well.
Yeah, it was I had issues with the tower anyhow, because I mean, even if they were just sort of moving in to it, it wasn't a livable space.
No.
Not in any way, shape, or form. Right. I'm not sure why they were living in it, unless it was like intended as temporary. Well,
was it a medieval lighthouse? Yeah. Like, I don't know. What was it for?
You know, it was just there for that epic battle. So that
just to fall down.
Yeah.
It's just there to fall down.
He's a bigger dude. He gets a bigger quickening.
This is before the quickening. The whole thing's falling apart around them while they're fighting.
While they're fighting, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there's that's something else. I mean, you don't need that setting for their final battle.
Yeah, for Ramirez. And it could be anywhere, really. But
yeah, it could be. I mean, if they want like
I think it comes down to budget and what could they get into at the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way it is in most movies, isn't it?
I mean, it probably would be more of a farm setting after having to flee his own lands because, you know, persecution of rising from the dead.
Yeah.
You're lucky you weren't beheaded by your own people.
Really, he was, yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, even his first wife turns on him like on a dime.
Yeah, so, apparently that scene was in the original script was a little more violent, but they toned it down a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it was still pretty upsetting to watch, though.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's kind of heartbreaking too, because all his family. And even the one he's closest to, the best he could do is get the hell out of town.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You need to leave.
Yeah. For your own well-being, you have to go.
Right? Yeah.
And I'll help you get out, but that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, in that type of society, that's exactly what would happen, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have somebody who should be dead, all of a sudden hale and healthy and like he'd never been stabbed.
Yeah, no markings, no wounds, you know.
Full of energy.
Witchcraft.
Yeah, it's, absolutely. And it is kind of, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a kind of magic.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's in the movie.
You did not say
that. It's in the movie. Connor says it. It's in the movie. That's why the Queen song was written. Because it's in the movie. They initially only wrote that first bit. And then as they saw the rushes and stuff, they were inspired to do more. That's why they did the entire soundtrack.
It was a great soundtrack.
It is, because it's very, a lot heavier than a normal Queen music would have been at the time.
Yeah.
Some of it they hate because of it, because it does sound a little heavy metal-ish even to them. But yeah, it's one of my favorites, and a lot of it didn't come out until way later in the studio album called A Kind of Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's, the soundtrack goes so hand in hand with this movie.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big one. That's going to be a toughie. Like, do you have people cover the music in a remake?
I would.
Like, a lot of it works. Yeah. Even the ballads, you know, that, Jesus, that one of Who Wants to Live Forever.
Mm.
Great song.
Makes me teary-eyed every time I hear it.
I would have, you know, I would have covers of it. But I would have the same music, like the same general soundtrack, but just have other people
It works so well.
Cover the songs.
And it cuts together so well, too, with the tunes. Even
all the songs are appropriate for the scene, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It works so well.
Yeah, given what they had to work with, I mean, like I said, I can understand why critics don't love this movie, because mm-hmm. it's not a critic's movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a moviegoer's movie. It's intended to entertain, thrill you, break your heart a little bit, and it does all of that.
Speaking of critics,
time to run that bit.
Yeah, let's run that bit from Siskel and Ebert.
A Scottish accent. I should have explained that the story goes back and forth between ancient Scotland and the modern day. You know, the ancient stuff reminded me of the Vikings. Remember with Kirk Douglas going...
The Vikings was better, and it was a bad film.
Kirk Douglas goes past on the horse, and Ernest Borgnine says, "What a man! Odin could have sired him, but I did." That's the kind of dialogue they have in here. No accent is going to save this dialogue. I thought Highlander was a completely, and thank you for laughing at that story, completely silly and very boring movie. I kept hoping for something interesting to come along and interrupt those endless sword fights. Back and forth. These guys must have had pecs like this by the time they were finished. And finally I realized what movie Highlander reminded me of. That's entertainment. That's right, that's entertainment, and that's dancing, and all those other movies that are collections of all the great high points from dozens of movies, one high point right after another with nothing in between. Now, take away the high points, too, and you have Highlander. You could call it That's Sword Fighting.
Yeah, well, that's not bad. That's funnier than your impression of Ernest Borgnine.
Thank you very much.
This one... First of all, I'm going to tell you something. I saw this in one of the best movie theaters in the United States. I happened to be in Los Angeles, and I saw this in the AFCO Cinema on Wilshire Boulevard near Westwood. The sound was spectacular, and when this movie started mm-hmm. with a great opening scene, I thought, I'm in for a fabulous time. Mm-hmm. I saw this movie under the greatest conditions that I've seen a movie in a long time. Mm-hmm. It is one of the lousiest films I've ever seen in my life. It made no sense whatsoever as it flipped between the two stories. Sean Connery is billed forth here. He has a bit part. If you're a Sean Connery fan, don't get suckered in go to see it. His whole part, he looks like he just stepped off a beef eater gin bottle. He's laughable. The whole movie is crazable.
The whole movie is completely ridiculous. And oddly enough, we didn't go to the same show, apparently, because I didn't see you there, but I saw it in the same theater. and the sound is good. You're thinking, you're sitting there thinking, all I've seen so many movies and so many crummy theaters.
Yes.
Why, if I'm in this theater, can't I be seeing a good movie?
Yes.
I guess we're just too much to ask for.
You have the manners of a goat, and you smell like a dung heap.
Dicks. what movie did they see?
I don't know.
Like, this movie... boring? Boring. He called it boring.
For them, it's all about technical. And it's really less about enjoying and being entertained. It's more about technicality.
I don't know. I think I have a critical eye, and at no point would I think Highlander's boring. I mean, it's not always the best execution. Sean Connery, they call it a bit part. It's a very important part, but he was only available for a week.
Yeah,
this is Siskel and Ebert, who couldn't shut up about how great driving Miss Daisy was. So you have to consider the source.
Oh, so I think for them, they like talking over action.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. They want dialogue over sword fights, and I don't think the sword fights are boring, but... Given what they got coming up, I think you could have the sword fights be different. Like, everybody should have their own fighting style.
They should.
Connor should be a little mix of what Ramirez taught him and what he already knew with his Scottish style.
Exactly.
I would actually think an Egyptian, although he learned a few things over 2,000 years under one of the best sword makers in the world, so he would have had kind of a mix of Japanese style. But I'd almost want to see Ramirez, if he's Egyptian, have a scimitar on him as well, because it'd be something he'd be comfortable with. And maybe another immortal has a two-handed style, a two-double sword kind of style.
Well, that would be the Kurgan for sure, right?
A little more barbaric. Right.
Oh, I would think he would love, like, he would be more of a big two-handed broadsword type of guy. That's Conan.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you have a fencing style, right, with the rapier, and then you have, like, the Japanese style, which is the two-handed.
Yeah, there's so much different. And in a remake, I'd like to see that. Like, that choreography is so important, I think, in doing something like this, and picking the director from John Wick is a great way to go, because this guy was doing fighting styles with guns.
Yes.
Even for my remake, I just stuck with him because, like, well, I hope he doesn't leave the project because he's awesome. Yeah. Like, this is a perfect choice for this guy. He's going to recognize, I mean, he's a stunt coordinator too, but he's going to recognize that we should have these unique styles, and each time immortals fight, it should be unique to them.
And make each fight interesting in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
right? Without gymnastics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could, though. Well, again, that would be somebody's individual style. Yeah. Like, say somebody became an immortal more recently, and he's into parkour.
Yeah, but, right, exactly.
That would be a really great addition.
Yeah,
wouldn't it be awesome?
Yeah. That'd be a whole new movie, man.
Hey, like, kid.
Totally imagining.
Yeah,
just somebody swipes his head while he's upside down.
Yeah, I mean, you could have that showy offy stuff.
Yeah, it'll dazzle the audience.
It'll give the audience a thrill, and then it has consequences for them because it's like, no.
Oh, man, if a parkour guy got his head chopped off while he was upside down, would the quickening shoot him up in the air like a rocket?
That would actually be freaking awesome.
It would be funny as fuck.
Yeah, it would be funny, yeah. the athletic style would also speak to the way they sword fight,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Fassel, however you say his name, when he was doing all those backflips and stuff like that, that's not the style of fighting that somebody who uses that type of sword would use.
No, especially when you watch the extended edition where he's just backflip, backflip, backflip. And like, okay, the first backflip might have been strategy. After that, it's just showing off.
Yes.
It's just showing off. You don't need to go down the parking lot. I'm like, dude.
Just run.
Yeah. I mean, if Connor had a gun, I would have just shot him and then, like, chopped off his head for being an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, it was completely unnecessary, and it didn't make sense for that character. I mean, yeah, because Connor definitely, like, his fighting style before meeting Ramirez would have been very much hack and slash. You're swinging a heavy sword.
He was young, too, yeah. So he probably wouldn't have learned a lot of strategy at that point.
Well, and there's not a lot of strategy in that either.
But because you guys are considering doing, like, the unique style to the fighter, that's when you'd want to bring in your Asian
like a samurai guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you'd want to bring your Asian guy in and add him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I think
yeah, it was in the original script, and it's a fight I'd like to see.
Yeah, and I certainly more fights would not hurt this film, a remake.
No, despite what Siskel and Ebert say.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't even think about that, man. Don't even.
No, I found that, and I'm like, that pisses me off.
You listen to Siskel and Ebert, and they just make you more irate. Like, no.
Sometimes, there's a lot of times I would agree with Ebert, but not this go around.
Yeah, I rarely ever agreed with Siskel.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is enjoyable because it's fun, and they didn't find the fun in it, and it's not the most well put together stuff, especially the stuff with Brenda doesn't come together in the best of ways.
No, and I think Val commented on that when we were watching. He's like, how did they go from like meeting twice to jumping into bed together? Right? Mm-hmm. It's such a movie trope that
especially
needs to be
when
fixed.
She's already investigating him as a key suspect in a beheading, and he's already been to the cops and stuff for this investigation. Why is he stalking her at the end of that?
The two of them had absolutely no chemistry.
No. And it's like, oh, you're immortal, let me sleep with you.
Well, yeah, and she finds out a lot of that by investigating it, which is not your job.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't he stalking her to find out what she was more interested
about the sword.
Yeah,
she wanted to know more about the sword, and she found evidence of the Masamune, the Ramirez's sword that he had hid up in the rafters of the garden.
Yes, which with the sword making style that predates any previous known method of making that.
Yeah, so
sword,
she
right?
she her motives are purely selfish for her own research as a metallurgist. It's not super clear. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, and that's again something to be fixed, right? If you're going to develop a relationship between these two, develop it.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you're going to do that scene and have her keep her the same, you have the cops approach her with the evidence they've already got with the Toledo Salamanca and maybe some stuff taken from the scene of another sword that doesn't match, you know, the fibers and whatnot and the little metal shards, and have her investigate that. She is brought in as an expert, but does not work for the police.
I like that. And I would almost get rid of the whole cop suspecting him. Instead, she's going to him.
Why did they show up so quickly? Yeah. Like, nobody was around to witness it. Yeah. So, like, how quickly would they be on the scene? I mean, granted, it's a large gathering of people in a public forum. Yeah. So, generally, cops tend to be around that.
Yeah.
But there was no reason for them to surround him, and when they did,
No, there's absolutely no reason. I would do
unless you have a witness.
Yeah, and instead, and that would actually provide a more viable reason for them to develop a relationship. Is she goes to him because he is an antique dealer who does deal in antique swords,
mm-hmm.
right? So maybe they have a prior relationship where she had used research from him at some other point, right? Mm-hmm. So then you give a viable reason for them to be interested and engaged with each other.
Yeah. I get rid of the street vigilante, too. The guy who gets gutted.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, that was just as a witness and that can pull Nash out as a suspect because he wasn't one of the two men that were fighting.
Yeah.
So that takes Nash out as a suspect, but he just has that as a witness rather than somebody getting gutted, and it was silly.
Like,
why would it be a vigilante? Why would it be somebody else? Like, just somebody happens to be there.
Yeah, the vigilante. I mean, that was a popular
unless he's dressed as Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, that was a pretty popular trope in the 80s, though. Is the
I suppose?
Yeah, the survivalist, right? And it still is now to a certain extent, but they don't tend to be urban.
No, they don't.
Yeah, getting rid of that would be just fine, and tightening up that fight scene, and you're fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Use that time there to add another character or another fight scene with some other immortals. Yeah, I mean, if they're going to have the gathering, it would be interesting to have the cops sort of running their asses off
mm-hmm.
with all of these beheadings that are happening there's so many because there's a dozen of them and they're slowly whittling down to the final two.
And I don't see, like, we already know the Kurgan's a badass, and we don't need to see him being like, okay, He's got a hooker in this scene. Why do we need that scene?
Hi, I'm Candy.
Of course you are.
Yeah, because they wanted to give him that cool line.
Yeah. I gotta give props to Clancy Brown, that church scene.
I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
I love the church scene.
He totally ad-libbed that line. It wasn't in the script at all. So, and it is definitely one of the more memorable bits of the movie. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, have that final battle happening, not just between the Kurgan and Connor, but between the last remaining immortals. Mm-hmm. Right? So instead of having them focused on Connor as a suspect, have the cops in there, but running their asses off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's why they've engaged Brenda.
The cops on scene could be the one. As a witness, they're also witnesses to, like, okay, Nash isn't a suspect anymore because that big ass dude is.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if Nash is even a suspect.
Yeah.
Right? So and they can say you know what, we know that this is two different swords, and that's why they call in our metallurgist, right? Mm-hmm. The woman who's written a book on the different types of sword making.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you just make that their story a lot more believable.
Yeah, I mean, rather than have them be on the scene of that first fight with Fassel, maybe they initially go to Nash as an expert in antique swords.
Yeah. And then maybe he refers them to her, mm-hmm. right, instead, because he's read her book.
How do immortals, like, today, like, okay, in the 80s, it'd be fairly simple to forge an identity. You know, he took it off of a stillborn baby. Yeah. But it'd be so much harder to do now.
That's why we wouldn't want to move too far forward in time. I was thinking like early to mid 90s, right? So updated a little bit, but not to modern time. Because I think about it, the challenges of having it occur in modern time is you've got people with cell phones who videotape everything,
mm-hmm.
or video everything, getting myself there. So everything's on video, right? You have cell phones, you have the challenges
CCTV.
Of...
CCTV.
Yeah.
Oh, there was CCTV even in the 80s.
Even in the 80s, yeah. But then you also have the challenges of creating a false identity. And right. I mean, admittedly, his false identity would have been created 30 or 40 years before, so he still could have been set it up in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Right? But you have to address all those other challenges.
No, you don't.
I don't know if that's too terribly important.
No, I wouldn't. I like that.
I like the nature of discovery of that. I mean, you could still have that modern day, and maybe that's what does put Nash on as a suspect, is somebody's cell phone or a CCTV camera.
I mean,
it'd be fuzzy or something because they're moving really fast.
Yeah, right. And that's how they get on. They find out about the Kurgan as well because somebody filmed.
Maybe it's naturally fuzzy anyway because there's a certain kind of energy of immortals that just distorts cameras.
Yeah, that could
work. There you go.
That's perfect, right there.
There you go. There's a solution.
It's like a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. Boom.
Yeah, and they would have. He would have gotten his identity well before. Before everything became digitized, right? So
yeah.
So it still could work.
What else do we want to change? Anything else we want to change?
The final fight scene on the rooftop.
What?
The water.
I don't like the water either.
Yeah.
You can change the whole setting if you want. I mean, I read that they initially wanted to do it at the Statue of Liberty, but
no,
I didn't like that, and nor could they get the clearances for it at the time. There was another one they wanted to do. And then the rooftop was just, they'd already used the set once, so it was the cheapest and easiest to do.
I like the presence of the neon sign.
Oh, I like that, right? It's just the
Times Square.
Tower.
If you're going to keep it in New York, Times Square. I mean, there's lots of screens to blow up.
Exactly, right? Lots of lights. What if part of it is caught on those big TVs?
I mean, it would be very
public,
though.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
There is nothing wrong with that. That would make there'd be a big reason to flee, and then you could have a big thing with the cops or something afterwards.
There you go.
Yeah.
Times Square.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots of lights. Big television screens.
Yeah. You want things to blow up.
Yeah, people and, like, I mean, cars flipping over from the final quickening would be just, like, epic.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, like, how they used the animation to, I mean, initially it was to hide the wires of Connor floating while he's receiving the gift of the quickening. There's an aspect that I really liked where he says the quickening is overpowering me and it looks demonic,
yeah,
this animation. And I kind of liked that he was fighting with the Kurgan's really heavy evil nature and how that could overtake him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's absorbing internal struggle. His energy.
Yeah, and then internal struggle of what that might be. Like, I'd almost think maybe he would take a swing or something at Brenda initially because he's still fighting that personality before calming down.
Can you just get rid of, like, the little cartoon dragons and stuff that are obviously floating in the air?
Yeah, yeah, it was... That was cheesy.
It was cheesy as hell. I mean, that doesn't age well at all.
No.
Most of that should be mental, that combat, I think. Yeah. It's almost a mental fight. Yeah, maybe it should. Maybe it could be. Maybe it could be this fight in his brain, a fight within a fight.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he won the physical. Now he's doing the mental battle. And you can make it far more monstrous in his own brain.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and he doesn't even have to, like, take a swing necessarily at Brenda, but just because we've now done it, put it in a public place, mm-hmm. right? He can start to go after other spectators,
mm-hmm.
right? And but before,
or maybe he's still. It'd be funny if he got arrested again. He did just commit a homicide in front of everybody.
But I mean, if he manages to, like, just, you can really show that battle really well if he stops himself before he cuts down an innocent bystander,
mm-hmm.
right? If he comes to grips with that. That's,
I don't know, that end scene's clumsy in the original film, and it still feels kind of clumsy because you do have to have him get away.
That's,
so I guess you don't have to have him get away, but I mean, that's certainly an interesting way to go if he got arrested and put on trial.
Yeah, that is the problem, right? Is how does he escape justice, as it mm-hmm. were, right?
Yeah, but going through that whole process is just going to kill the excitement of him being the one, and that last quickening scene, if he has to deal with, like, legalities and stuff, that would just be, you just ruined my high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But no, I mean, you could even have it something as simple as yeah, the final fight scene moves away from time. People have fled, right? And then as soon as it's over, they walk away before the police arrive, right? Because
this is why maybe where you can introduce a quick scene where he does get arrested and he's thrown in the back of a cop car, pulled off the scene, and then the cop car stops and they let him out. They're watchers.
See, and that might work. That might work.
Yeah, they're aware of this of this. Somehow,
the Watchers have been around for about 5,000 years, I think, according to the TV lore, watching and not trying to get involved, but realizing sometimes they get involved because of the tremendous force for good in certain immortals. And that would be interesting to introduce a Watcher that could be put in a sequel or something later on.
Absolutely. That worked.
Reintroduce the concept right away of the Watchers.
Yeah, and again, yeah. Then you save it from future retconning.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are certain aspects of the TV series introduced that work pretty well. Yeah. So why not embrace those early on?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. And they give you a certain kind of resolution, and you could have that fun hillside romantic hillside moment in Scotland if you want it.
Yeah.
I can hear everything.
And Brenda should be pregnant. He should finally, you know, now that he's become human, he's no longer immortal, she should be pregnant. And
yeah. Oh, that was something in the source. Duncan, he's immortal, but actually does have a child with somebody. Remember?
Yes, I think I remember that.
And I think that's what is referred to as there can be only one, and he manages to do that while he's still immortal, which is an interesting twist, but I don't know. Certain mythology still needs to iron out. I certainly don't have all the solutions for it, but I think we've ironed it out in such a way where it'll still work if you want to keep going.
Yes.
I'm inspired now to watch the TV series again.
Yeah, I have season one, but that's it. After that, I'm going to have to go look in looking on the YouTubes or iTunes or something for it. Because those seasons are really expensive on on Amazon. So I'm hoping that this entire series will get a proper re-release, a cheaper re-release when their proposed reboot
There were quite
happens.
A few, weren't there? How many seasons were there?
I think it was
there?
Six seasons. Okay. And then the season of The Raven as well.
Right. The spin-off.
Yeah. Lots to watch there.
Yeah, it's a lot of material.
Yeah. Yep, well, it was on Netflix for a while because we were watching it on Netflix for a little while, but I don't know if it's still on there.
Yes, correct, but they took it off.
That sucks. I know it's not on Amazon Prime right now, so I don't know. I'm on the hunt. I still want to watch more, and the movies are kind of terrible, but the series was pretty good and just got better as it went along. So
it did, yeah. As they got more money to do more with it, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is it time to recast?
I think it's time to recast.
Sure.
Okay, Val, why don't you start us off?
Okay, so I went with Colin Farrell as Juan Charles. Ramirez,
okay.
Correct. Well, his full name was, okay.
Juan Carlos Villalobos Ramirez.
Correct. And for Connor, I went with James McAvoy.
Okay.
Heather, Alicia Cuthbert.
Okay.
Because I wanted to stay young and cute, because Heather was... young and cute. Javier Bardem as the Kurgan.
He's actually currently attached as Ramirez for the reboot. So
weird.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad. And Amy Adams as Brenda.
Cool. All right. I kind of dig that. For me, did you have a director at all? No.
No, I don't really have a director, but I want someone who is. A little more technologically sound and someone who's really, you know, hip on the action.
Yeah.
So, John Woo.
Well, that's not a bad choice. My first choice is already attached to the film. So Chad Stahelski from John Wick is currently attached. I wouldn't change that. I think that is an awesome choice. I would totally dig that. Actually, the current script writer right now is Ryan Condal, who wrote The Colony and is currently developing Conan for Amazon. So I don't know if it's good or not, but we'll wait and see about Mr. Ryan Condal and his script for the remake for Highlander. But maybe he's listening to us right now and we'll tweak it somewhat. For my Connor McLeod, I went with Sam Heughan from Outlander and a Scottish actor. I feel that's important. I went with Scottish there. For my Brenda, I went with Kristen Ritter. I wanted somebody who can kind of that Jessica Jones vibe. I'm like, the first thing I thought about out of Brenda, I'm like, I Kristen wanted her to be Ritter, a little actually. Little snappier, a little tougher, and I thought Kristen Ritter might make a good Brenda.
She would definitely add a comedic element.
Yeah, comedic, but at the same time, a little rougher and tumble, wouldn't succumb to the schmarm and charm of Connor right away.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
For the Kurgan, fucking Aquaman, Jason Momoa.
That's funny, because I actually told Val, I'll give you a gimme, you Jason Momoa, but I didn't.
Okay. And I'm like, no.
For my Ramirez, I went with the Ramirez. His name actually is Edgar Ramirez. He was in Bright recently, as well as Zero Dark Thirty and Point Break.
Yes.
But yes, I wanted somebody who was Spanish to do that part if he's got a Spanish name. And he's got the name. So they wanted, if somebody says, hey, Ramirez, he's going to look automatically.
Yep.
It's not even acting. For Heather, I went with another Scottish actress, Karen Gillan. From Doctor Who. She was Amy Pond. Okay, she was in Guardians of the Galaxy. She was Gamora's sister.
I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
There you go. Unfortunately, I didn't come up with a good Rachel. So,
oh, you're going to love my Rachel.
I'm going to rely on Sam for that one. I also want, because I wanted Castagir to have a bigger role, that friendship of a fellow immortal, and I went with Idris Elba.
I've read your freaking mind. I knew that's what you were going to say.
Oh, you expanded this cast.
It's like we've done this more than once.
Yeah. Yes.
And well, favorites. I love this movie, and I'm like, I would have cast everybody if I had the time.
Yeah, the line could go on and on. But the one great thing about the original movie, though, is all of these actors and actresses, cast member, aside from, you know, Brenda, they all had a real presence in the movie, and they were really good, strong characters.
Yeah, and I always saw the potential. They were really well written. Yeah, even with the characters that weren't on screen long enough, there's a certain presence to Castagir that I wanted more of. I mean, especially if you're going to have a shared memory with them, have them in the fucking scene.
Yeah,
I mean, I like the duel scene, but
it's freaking hilarious.
It's hilarious, and it lightens up a fairly heavy movie, but. Where's Castagir? It's
yeah, because he's like, it was his memory. He wasn't even in it. That was a really great scene.
Fucking hell.
My God. He just like, oh, I remembered it now. It's hilarious. Yeah, it's wonderful.
All right, Sam, finish this off here.
Okay, so for my Connor McLeod, I went with a Scottish actor by the name of Richard Madden, who most will remember as Robb Stark from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
For my Brenda Wyatt, I went with Amber Stevens-West from Greek and 22 Jump Street. Okay. She played Ashley. For my Juan Ramirez, I actually went with an Egyptian.
Oh, nice.
I went with Rami Malek.
Hmm.
I'd like to see him in that type of role. And I really like the tie into Queen, since he's playing Freddie Mercury in the Queen movie.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
You guys and your Easter eggs.
Yeah. Yeah, we like them. For my Heather McLeod, I went with another Game of Thrones alumni, also Scottish, Rose Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Rachel Ellenstein, because I was still kind of thinking in the 80s, early 90s, she'd be about the right age now. I went with Anne Perlow.
Okay.
Because I wanted a French
actress. Right.
Because I was assuming that he was in France when he saved that girl from the Germans.
Yeah.
Right. And then for my Kurgan, I went with a Canadian actor, actually, by the name of Daniel Cudmore, who most people would know as Colossus from the recent X-Men movies.
Oh, okay.
Right, because he's fucking huge.
Not not the guy who played Colossus in Deadpool, though.
No, he was
okay, in the X-Men. So he was the one in First Class.
Yes.
Okay. Right?
So yeah, like 6'6".
Big dude. Big, right? Handsome dude.
Yes, I wanted somebody really big. I think he could do with the right makeup and stuff, I think he could do the very serious Kurgan-y look very, very well.
Yeah, sure. You don't want handsome for Kurgan.
No, but
edgy, but not handsome.
Yeah, and
makeup can ugly him up.
Yeah, can yeah, it's true, right? And a good actor can do it all on their own.
Of what we normally do in movies. Right. Run him over with a car or some
shit.
There's no
reason Kurgan can't be handsome.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, Clancy Brown wasn't an unattractive man when he was younger.
No, I mean, actually had quite a few prosthetics on him to make him uglier.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And the makeup, he had the black makeup on his cheeks the whole time because it made him look meaner.
Yeah.
Right? Simple makeup can do that. And then I had trouble with the director, to be honest.
That's why I stuck with the director they already attached. Yeah, I'm like, Jesus, I don't know if we can get better than that.
Yeah, in retrospect, I probably would have if that had even occurred to me, if I'd known at the time. But I went with Joe Johnston because he has done sort of epic action films. He's done Captain America: First Avenger, right? So he's done the big set pieces.
He'd be good.
Epic battles. I figured, why not? I think he'd be a good director for it as well.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice at all. So I'm wondering about our audience. I mean, this is a tough one because I don't know. With a reboot of something like this that we're also attached to, it's going to be a tough one. But who would you be your key Connor McLeod and Kurgan for a remake? You can let us know your choices on our social media at Invasion Remake. Invasion the Remake, of course, on Instagram and Facebook, and Invasion the Remake at gmail.com. Let us know who your choices would be to play those parts. And of course, you can always leave us a short review and a 5-star rating over on Apple Podcasts or your other podcast providers, and help us out. Let other people know about the show by telling them where to find us. You can do that over on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Audio Boom, Spreaker, and frickin' YouTube.
Okay.
If you're on YouTube, not every episode is there because, you know, they get a little antsy over there sometimes about copyrighted material. And those trailers sometimes get me in trouble.
Yeah.
So sometimes I pull them. So if certain episodes, like, oh, say, something full of Queen stuff isn't there, don't blame me because it's YouTube. If you want notifications, subscribe and ring that bell. So you get the notifications of every new episode that drops. And of course, if you see us post on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, share it with your friends as well. Share that post out, and it helps us out a lot as well.
Yeah, we're not your dirty little secrets.
That's right. This is a very public invasion, and we want to hold these remakes to task, and we are beating the Highlander remake to the theaters by probably a year or two. So hopefully they are listening, because a lot of people love this franchise, and let's iron this out and while paying respect to what works and ditching what doesn't. So no aliens, no sci-fi. Let's keep it out of the future entirely. It's the present and the past. No further. These are my hard guidelines. Don't do it. Every time you do it, you fuck it up.
Yes, they do.
You don't have to give us an ending. We just want to see immortals fighting each other. That's all we want. That's all we ask for. We want heads flying. I don't know. Are they going to hard R this fucker?
I don't know.
For heads flying, there's a distinct lack of blood. It's all a lot of funky lighting instead.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of hard because if they remake it exactly like the way they made it, then we're going to go, well, they just basically redid the whole
thing. Yeah, right? We don't need that
really
either.
They really need to add something a little different.
They do. They have to reimagine it using the original source material, as bad as most of it was. As far as the force.
That's why I think bumping up Castigear in there as well will help that out and give more buddy aspect, that an immortal life doesn't have to be one of entire solitude as well. There are friendships that would be really deep because they go back hundreds, if not thousands of years in some cases. And that's an interesting aspect as well. I mean, exploring the loneliness of that as well. I mean, there's a weird thing happening there because you can't have children, and if you fall in love with a mortal person, it's, you know, it's short term. I mean, by your standards, it's going to be short term.
Yep.
It might last 20 to 50 years. Then what?
Yeah.
Unless you fall in love with an immortal, but
where does that leave you?
Where does that leave you? One fight. You didn't have to chop off my head, take my head off.
I just hope that when they remake it, they just keep it clean. This is a, you know, it's a classic.
It is a classic.
Is a classic. And
it makes me worried.
Reimagining it is fun, but
do we actually want to see it?
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is.
In the right hands, and that's why I... At least right now, it's in the hands of somebody I think is going to really respect the material and make an entertaining film. But this is a tough one. You know, this is what was a hard one for me even to do for the show, because I love it so much and don't need another one. But at the same time, they've done so much to ruin the franchise over the years that I would like to see it smoothed out and fixed. And maybe a fresh start is the way to do that.
And sometimes, it's the only way to go, but
yeah, because what is with the McLeod clan that there's like four that are immortal over thousands of years? Like, come on now, we need to smooth that out.
yes, they do. But it's important because I mean, it is called Highlander, right? And I think that's why they keep going back to that bloodline.
Mm-hmm. And, like, there are nobody else with Scottish names.
Yeah. But I think if they explained what like makes this bloodline so powerful, it could work.
Maybe, you know, that's their Star Wars, so maybe that's their Skywalker, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I saw some comments that, you know, Highlander is just a swords version of Terminator. And in a way, they're kind of right. The more I thought about it, I'm like, it is kind of just Terminator, really. This big, bulky dude with the sword is coming after people. And lots of running.
In some
lots of running.
Yeah, lots of running, yeah. Yeah, there's. I can see that.
Structurally, they're very similar. It is true, and Terminator did come a few years earlier, so they might be onto something with that comment.
Yeah, but movies always do that, right?
Yeah,
their ideas piggyback on movies previous.
Yeah, you can
with
certainly
a few little shifts.
You can certainly see that in the quickening of a lot of things that they ripped off just to piece a movie together really quickly. I mean, two of the bad guys got these flying. One's like a flying surfboard straight out of Back to the Future. So.
Yeah, stop bringing it up, man. Yeah. Just, it's just like...
I know. It's cancer to the
it's bad.
Franchise, even to the point where they had to write it out.
Yeah.
There's no saving this, no matter what version of the movie you watch.
Yep. Even if it wasn't a sequel, it still was a bad movie.
Yep. There's no saving crap, and we will never remake that movie because it should not exist.
Yeah. I agree.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that was Highlander, and I had a lot of fun with that. Thanks for making that my first birthday movie.
Yep.
And, we got a couple more. We got at least two more. I don't know if we'll have three or not, but at least two more. So stay tuned for the rest of my birthday choices over the next couple of weeks. We'll also have the results of the Oscars. We are... doing some early recordings because of scheduling conflicts, so you might not see the results of our Oscar pool until a few weeks after, actually as of this recording, the Oscars are this evening. So by the time you hear this, it's going to be 2 weeks after. So yeah, we might not actually have the after effects of the Oscar until our April recordings, but be patient. There is a winner. It is coming.
Yes. Yes. And it's going to be me.
there could be only one winner, and we know it's going to be me.
There can be only one.
As long as it's not Tyler.
Right? How did he win with Hudson Hawk? How? Wait a minute. Who's the Kurgan and who's the Highlander in this contest?
I have no idea.
I feel like I'm the Kurgan.
I know you'd say that.
Trying to hold on to the prize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sam is the Highlander.
Or Trish.
It could be Trish.
Sam's the Highlander. I love you, Trish. Sam's the Highlander.
I guess, well, she's Irish, though.
She's Irish, yeah.
Irish.
Well, I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And it's me, Belle.
And we are out of here.
This is where it all began. Can you tell me about the prize?
It's like a whirlwind in my head. But if I concentrate, I know what people are thinking all over the world. Presidents, diplomats, scientists. I can help them understand each other.
What am I thinking?
You're thinking whether or not you can love me. You can. I'm just like you. I can love and have children, live and grow old. You never prepared me for that, you Spanish peacock.
Patience, Highlander. You have done well. But it will take time. Your generation is being born and dying. You're at one with all living things. Each man's thoughts and dreams are yours to know. You have power beyond imagination. Use it well, my friend. Don't lose your head.